This is a CBC podcast. When a story makes headlines in Canada or around the world, CBC Radio goes deeper and takes you to the heart of what's really going on. Now, with story alerts delivered right to your inbox, you'll be the first to hear exclusive interviews, thoughtful analysis, and unique insight on major events. Sign up for CBC Radio Story Alerts at cbc.ca/subscriptions.
Hello, I'm Anna Maria Tremonti, and you're listening to The Current. Still to come, the social media's role in relationship train wrecks and fears of actual train wrecks, our listeners' thoughts on some of the stories of the week. But first, the role Canada can play to protect the children of Kenya.
In Kenya, a woman or girl is raped every 30 minutes. While rape is illegal here, the law is rarely enforced, and girls are often assaulted by the very officials in charge of protecting them. In eastern Kenya, 160 girls, all victims, some as young as three, were determined to seek justice. In May 2013, with legal help, they secured a landmark court order ensuring the enforcement of the existing laws.
A special kind of history was made last May by a group in May of 2013 by a group of Kenyan girls known as the 160 Girls. They sued their government for failing to protect them from rape, and they won. A Canadian human rights lawyer was involved in that landmark ruling, and we'll hear how shortly. But first, here are two of the 160 girls. Charity was just 4 years old when she was assaulted. Her sister Suzanne was six. They speak through a translator on this tape, and a warning, some of what you will hear in this next half hour is disturbing.
She came out of school before her brother. His name is Mwendwa. She found the father in the house. The father asked her to remove the panties, and I jumped on his bed and he raped me. Susan.
Yeah?
Oh.
Daddy.
My dad put his penis between my legs. I believe my dad should be jailed.
Those interviews were recorded by journalist Sally Armstrong for the CBC radio program Ideas, and we will post links to her two-part documentary on our website at cbc.ca/thecurrent. Charity and Suzanne and girls like them are getting justice. In the groundbreaking lawsuit, Kenyan police were blamed for creating a climate of impunity for the rapists. They were told to enforce the existing laws and to take action against the perpetrators or face fines. This week, Kenyan police are in Toronto to develop training to help police better handle rape cases. The lawsuit against the Kenyan government was the initiative of the 160 Girls Project, a joint effort of the Equality Effect, a Canadian charitable organization, and its partner Ripple International in Kenya. Fiona Sampson is a human rights lawyer and the executive director of the Equality Effect, and she was part of that legal challenge, and she's with me in our Toronto studio. Welcome.
Thank you.
You know, I know you've worked on this a long time, but to hear those girls, I'm just wondering how you react. You know their stories, but to hear them again.
You know, it's bittersweet because the story is based in a story of violence and oppression, but ultimately it becomes a story of transformation and empowerment. So to know that the girls are now getting justice and have been transformed from rape victims to equality victors is really very, very satisfying.
How significant was Kenya's High Court ruling in favor of the 160 girls then?
It was huge. It made legal history in Kenya and set the high watermark internationally for girls' rights. So Kenya is now the leader in terms of girls' rights. And it was a landmark decision in terms of the new constitution in Kenya. So it was a real groundbreaking moment.
What can you tell us about what's happened to the perpetrators of some of the crimes since the ruling was announced then?
So we are thrilled to have achieved an 80% success rate in terms of the result of the High Court decision. The police have been very responsive, and 80% of the cases have now resulted in access to justice for the girls. Most recently, a little girl named Yvonne. Her case was one of the 160 girls. And she was raped when she was 8 years old on the way to get water from the local river. And 3 weeks ago, we got a conviction in the case. There was a sentence passed, and the perpetrator has been sentenced to a life sentence. So it is real concrete justice for these girls.
And what impact have you seen in the larger Kenyan society since this ruling and these kinds of judgments?
So we are only at the very beginning of that work, and that's what we're thrilled to be working with the Kenyan police to be starting that work, turning things around. On the ground in Meru, our grassroots partner Mercy Chidi at Ripples International anecdotally knows that since the police started following up and really being very effective in terms of the 160 girls cases, ordinarily, we would have 2 to 3 cases of defilement, of rape, reported a week at the rape shelter. And in the last 2 to 3 months, there hasn't been a single case reported.
And you are staying involved. What will the Equality Effect be doing in the next steps then?
So we have developed a multi-pronged approach to ensuring that the 160 girls decision is actually enforced. And it's a little bit similar to the drunk driving campaigns that we've seen have some success. So we're working with communities, with police, and using the law to ensure that perpetrators are held responsible for their behavior. So we're doing police training. We're developing a phone app for police, which is a defilement investigation phone app, and it's the first of its kind internationally. So we're excited that will help in terms of getting effective results. And we're doing public legal education, public awareness, and really working in a very cooperative and collaborative manner to make sure that perpetrators are held accountable.
Well, and we've got two other people in the studio with us to talk more about how that follow-through will happen. So Fiona Sampson, we are joined by Masoud Munyi. He is the Senior Superintendent of Police in Kenya. He's in Canada this week. And Tom McCluskey is an inspector with the Vancouver Police Department, involved in training both with the Vancouver Police Department and internationally in the area of sex crimes. And he's working to develop training for the Kenyan police. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
And, let me sort of ask you first, Masoud Munyi, how did you and the Kenyan police forces react to the ruling when it was first handed down by the High Court?
Yeah, thank you very much. Our reaction to the ruling was that the courts, and indeed the government, was indeed going in the right direction in helping victims of sexual offences. You may want to take note that a number of laws are in existence in the country, but again, occasionally you would see that offenders were either getting away lightly, or maybe some of them were getting away because of insufficient evidence. That ruling gave us a new urge to ensure that we as police officers re-energized our efforts and give new focus to crimes relating to sexual offences, defilement, and particularly where girls and children are concerned.
And I guess it would also send a message to the police who were not making an effort then.
Exactly, because again, we cannot rule out possibilities of officers who may work in a way which is not entirely satisfactory. And that's why we have also a number now of institutions which have been put in place. For instance, we have the Internal Affairs Unit within the National Police Service, which is charged with the responsibility of ensuring that it records, registers, and investigates complaints against misconduct of the police. So the court decision, coupled with the efforts of the National Police Service, will ensure that henceforth, girls, women, and children are able to get faster, quicker and also justifiable justice towards them.
And this becomes very important because we knew that before the ruling, when girls sought help from police, there are reports that some officers reacted by yelling at them, not believing them, blaming them, demanding money. There was a case on record of a policeman responding to a girl's allegation that she was raped by turning around and sexually assaulting her again, the police officer. So those kinds of things were also targeted, and you believe that the message has now been sent to the police officers?
Loud and clear, because we have in the past been able to take action against officers who have also turned back their eyes and their efforts towards helping victims. We have had instances where officers have been accused of molesting victims, but also engaged in very unprofessional behavior. And these officers, a number of them have been jailed. A number of them, of course, have been suspended. Some are also awaiting legal action against them, even though the number is not big. But no matter how small that number is, the appropriate action taken against them will definitely send the right message.
Tom McCluskey, I understand you were in Kenya this summer.
I was in July, yes.
And you saw firsthand the challenges that face the Kenyan police. What do you identify some of the hurdles they have?
You know, we come from a country that's fairly advanced in terms of our tools in our toolbox to address issues like this. And traveling to Kenya gave me a firsthand look at, we've traveled to several police, different police stations and different areas of the country, just having a look at the challenges they face. And what I realize is that their laws are quite actually quite similar to ours, but the tools available to them aren't the same as what we have here. And the training perhaps is a little more advanced available to us here. And so it's a sort of a combination of not having enough tools and not having enough training.
When you say tools, you're talking like basics too. You're talking about paper and police cars. And
in some cases, run
through it with me.
Well, in some cases, yeah, that's true. But I'm thinking more in terms of, like, if we have a child that alleges a sexual assault here, we have a team that's ready to go. They move very quickly. They're trained interviewers in interviewing children. We have a hospital that has a designated doctor that's prepared to do the examination and is prepared to make a report and give that report to police rather quickly. And so things like that, we have those things already in place and ready to go. We also have social services who we work hand in hand with, and we have a number of other governmental agencies that work with us to address this issue rather quickly.
So you have essentially a whole system
that
kicks in.
That's right.
And that's missing there.
That's missing.
And that's what you're going to try to help.
Well, my role in this is actually just to provide the training introduce them to the best practices that we experience here in Canada and what works for us in Canada and what we've achieved here in Canada, and to pass that information, pass that training on to them.
Now, Fiona Sampson, you were talking about the app, and this is where this comes in terms of the ability for police, I guess, and others to start reporting this. What will the app actually do? Tell me more about the details of it.
So the app is a very concrete tool that'll be available to police to take them through the steps of a defilement investigation. Because I think for any police officer, it can be an emotionally challenging experience to have to deal with this kind of case. So to have the steps right in front of you on your phone app is an advantage, so that you know you're prepared to deal with it. And in Kenya, the idea of having a lot of paper available to you is not something that I've seen in police stations. So police stations don't have computers, they don't have printers, they have carbon paper if you're lucky, like a piece of carbon paper to make a copy. So really, the phone app will make Kenya a leader in terms of these kinds of investigations. They just leapfrog right ahead over the old-fashioned way of using a paper form to take you through the steps of an investigation. And some of it will be quite high-tech. BBDO Advertising is putting together this phone app for us, and it'll have the capacity to take pictures of crime scenes for police to be able to label the pictures, to do taped witness interviews and take complainant statements, and package all the evidence up in one place. You can store it on a cloud, and then it can be sent to the prosecutor. So whereas sometimes evidence may intentionally or unintentionally disappear between a police officer and the prosecutor, now it has a direct route and a safe and secure space. So it could really change things.
Masoud Mounieh, how yes. important is that in terms of the ability to respond?
That is will be very key in the way we respond as police officers, because one, we will be able to capture all the necessary evidentiary materials. We will be able to make reports as quickly as incidents occur. But most importantly, we will also be able to ensure that we secure convictions in court. And when that happens, ultimately, it has got two effects. One, people get justice, but also secondly, we will increasingly see a reduction in these cases, because we believe that if people know that they commit offences, they commit crimes, and they are able to be prosecuted effectively, it means the propensity for them to commit offences will go very, very down, and eventually we'll see a more safer society, particularly for girls.
Tom McCluskey, I want to ask you about the climate in Canada. Canadian police forces have been criticized for their attitudes towards sex crimes. The most glaring one, obviously, how long it took police to investigate the missing women in the Robert Picton case. The policeman who told female students at York University not to dress like sluts if they don't want to avoid being raped. What do we offer Kenyan police on this, given some of our own problems in Canada?
Well, that's a really good question. I'd like to say that we're moving away from that. I mean, we're very strict about situations like that and comments made like that by police officers. And I have to be honest, there is always going to be the odd person that comes out with a comment that just is totally unacceptable. But for the most part, the people that are in these sections now are very dedicated, very caring, very concerned investigators. They're officers who are interviewed before they get to those positions. And there's a sort of a strict adherence to making sure that all interests are focused on the victims now. So, you have to apologize for some of those comments that are made by officers, but it's really it's very odd for that us to see that now.
You think that people have learned a lot in this country too?
100%.
Decade.
We take a completely different approach to this now.
Masoud Mounieh, I understand you're the only male in the Kenyan Women Association in policing. Is that true?
I think until 2 or 3 weeks ago, because with my, again, arrival on the scene of the Kenya Association of Women in Policing, I was also able to influence other male officers to join that association. And I think now we are around 5 or 6. But I know that increasingly we'll have more men coming on board.
And how common are female police officers in Kenya?
How common?
Yeah, do you have a lot?
Yes, we have fairly a big number. And until 3 years or 5 years ago, we even brought the number even higher, because we now have a constitutional requirement that for every recruitment or any assignment, there must be a 30% inclusion of gender. So the numbers are increasingly now.
And what role do you think female police officers can play in being part of the solution on this specific issue?
I think the presence of female officers is key in this issue, because for one, they bring that motherly presence to an issue, but they also are able to connect with what is happening and help the male officers understand the problems more and be part of a solution. Because sometimes there are things which are unique to women, which we male officers may not understand better. But with my colleague who is a female next to me, she can be able to tell me, I think the best way to approach this issue, in spite of our training, is 1, 2, 3. And that alone is a very big, big pointer that gradually the presence and involvement of both male and female officers in all cases policing will be viewed as one big aspect of an undertaking.
Fiona Sampson, police forces do not exist in a vacuum. There are other institutions and societal issues to deal with in the context of this. Beyond training police in Kenya, what else is there to be done to ensure that the 160 girls ruling has ongoing impact?
So we are building a public legal education component into the project and bringing police into that to excuse me, to help us connect with communities and educate communities about the 160 girls decision, so that they know what the rights and obligations are under the High Court ruling, and that way girls and their families are empowered to actually claim justice. So it is definitely a multi-pronged approach, and there are other sectors in the justice system where there's opportunity for improvement. I think, you know, the judiciary, the prosecutors, the healthcare system, but we have limited resources to really be undertaking the work we're doing. So we're not taking on those components of the system right now. But we are looking at this public legal education and bringing the police and communities together. And I think that will give us a very effective strategy to hold perpetrators accountable.
And you're all in Toronto right now. Tom McCluskey, I think there are more Kenyan police coming in to work.
No, they're here now.
They're here now? They're here, yeah. What kinds of things then have you been doing with them right now?
Well, we've been training for the last 2 days, and we've got 2 more days to go. We've been training every day and introducing some of our best practices to them.
And do you see like real improvement, the kinds of questions they're asking you?
Yeah, I've actually been very impressed with the questions they've been asking. And it's been everybody's been involved in participating, which is really even a little bit unusual for teaching. But everybody's had a keen interest in what I'm teaching. Everybody's had a keen interest in improving. And I can really see from my observations that we all got the same goal. We want to do better for these young girls.
What kind of questions do they ask you?
Well, they relate to the training itself specifically. Some of our laws aren't exactly the same, so we will talk about the laws and the differences in the laws. And they'll ask questions really that are more technical than anything, how we could apply this to their situation, how the circumstances could apply to what they do. And then they also indicate their challenges and difficulties in making some of these applications, because some of their rural communities have one police officer, and he is everything, handling, you know, many, many calls. So, and sometimes without transportation. So it's, you know, when you're fed these sort of challenges, it makes it a challenge even for me to try and answer those questions sometimes.
Yeah, so I guess it will be up to them to develop, Masoud Mounier, develop some kind of system where they can rely on each other, even from other communities than police officers.
Precisely, because the best way then to do this, according to us, is how do we domesticate this training in a way that it adds value to our local scenario? Because as Tom is saying, so many things are different: the systems, the resources available, the type of training, and everything. So we are doing in the training now, trying to apply what is being done in Canada, borrowing that, trying to see then how does it fit to our local scenario back in Kenya, so that we can still achieve the same results. Because ideally, policing and policing presence should always add value to the society. And if we have police officers who are not adding any value to the society, then they defeat the whole purpose of having a police in any place at that.
Tom McCluskey, you train internationally. Have you ever trained, basically you're dealing with a national police force. You're dealing with, this is going to cover the whole country and how they do it. It must be kind of fascinating to...
It is fascinating.
To be in on that level.
Yeah, it is. I've been very fortunate that I've been doing similar projects in Cambodia and in Indonesia. So it is very exciting for me, and it's very exciting to be partnered up with the Kenyan police on this project.
And so, Masoud Mounier, what hopes do you have for the girls and women of Kenya as you move forward with this new kind of policing?
I see a bright future and a secure future for women and girls in Kenya, because for one, I want to assure them that the police landscape in the country is changing. Together with partners like Equality Effect, the Canadian police, the Vancouver police particularly, and also the laws which the government is putting in place, the landscape and the environment will be totally different. And they can be assured that the police will be there to care for them. The police will be their friends, partners, brothers and sisters. And most importantly, they also need to have confidence, particularly by way of giving information. Because you may know that sometimes the absence of information because of fear, stereotyping, also makes the situation difficult for them. But the moment they are able to open up and trust the police in the ability to save them and secure them, it means for them, the area will be even more safer for them.
Fiona Sampson, when you began this, did you think you'd reach this point?
we always knew we would win eventually, but we didn't know that it would come this quickly, and we could not have predicted, I think, the fantastic partnerships that we've been able to engage in, and that is incredibly satisfying and rewarding. So in part we're meeting our expectations, but in part exceeding them. So we're very pleased.
It really is an example of you win a court case, but then the follow up becomes key, huh?
It is really critical, and it's something that hasn't always happened in Canada, is ensuring that the court decision is made real. So we're getting justice for the 160 girls, but we have to make sure we get justice for all 10 million girls in Kenya and beyond.
And perhaps maybe some girls will never have to get to the point where they need justice.
That's right, yes.
Thank you, all of you, for coming in and talking about this.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I've been speaking with Fiona Sampson, human rights lawyer and executive director of the Equality Effect. Masood Munyi is the senior superintendent of police in Kenya. And Tom McCluskey of the Vancouver Police Department trains in the area of sex crimes, both with the department and internationally. They were all with us in our Toronto studio. If you want to weigh in on what's happening, let us know. Tweet us. We are at The Current CBC. Find us at facebook.com/CBCTheCurrent. Coming up next, perfect apples in Canada and bad apples in North Korea. Our listeners' thoughts on some of the stories of the week. Laura Lynch is on the other side of the glass. She'll be joining me in studio momentarily. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti. This is The Current.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.